Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. Today on No Limits, we are going to talk about the subject that is dominating the national conversation right now, sexual harassment and sexual misconduct. If you would like to join the conversation, and we encourage you to do so, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Rima Shahid, Executive Director of Women for Change Indiana, Tracy Horth Kruger, Executive Director of the Indiana Coalition to End Sexual Assault, Deborah Daniels, Craig DeVault's Managing Partner. She's also a former U.S. Attorney and U.S. Assistant Attorney General. And joining us by phone is Kit Malone, Transgender Education and Advocacy Coordinator for the ACLU of Indiana. Welcome, all of you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. I probably ought to do my standard disclosure. Anytime we have someone from the ACLU on the show, I have to remind the audience that for 6 years I was the executive director of what now is the ACLU of Indiana. We don't want to withhold anything from the audience, because this is one of those issues that really has exploded into the public consciousness. I think it's probably wise for us to start by establishing some definitions of what we are talking about. I'm going to ask Deborah first to give us what a legal definition is of sexual harassment. And then everyone else is welcome to join in with other things, because as we found even in this discussion where people are talking about, you know, due process rights are being violated when they're being considered for an elected office, where due process really has nothing to do with that. Deborah.
Well, I'll try to be brief about this. The definition of sexual harassment can range across a pretty broad spectrum. Mm-hmm. So many people may think it's purely sexual misconduct, which can be, you know, anything from unwanted touching to rape. Mm-hmm. But actually, if you're going to talk about sexual harassment, you're talking about things ranging all the way to telling a tasteless joke mm-hmm. in front of someone who doesn't welcome it. Creating a hostile work environment is a term that's often used. So it's really a broad spectrum. And you mentioned due process, and I'm sure we'll get into that, but I would just say that the level of due process to which people are entitled can vary, and the level of culpability that is required to find them to have done something like this is going to vary depending on the severity of the punishment.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we should point out due process is something that really only applies in legal proceedings and often when we're making employment decisions. So, Tracy, I'm going to throw the next one to you. How common is this problem? I'm trying to set up where we're going with this, why it has exploded in the fashion that it has. Do we have any sort of numbers on this, or is there any kind of documentation?
Well, first of all, this is not a new issue. Mm-hmm. This has been something that's been happening for years and years and years, hundreds of years, way back from the start of time, probably, actually. So I know that in Indiana is certainly not void of sexual assault cases. In mm-hmm. fact, the CDC CDC states that 1 in 5 women in Indiana will be victims of sexual violence, and nearly 15% of young women and 5% of young men have been physically forced to have sexual intercourse in their lifetime. So we certainly have horrifying statistics, and these are the reported cases. And as we know, based on what we're seeing in our country, this is an incredibly underreported crime. So sexual violence, sexual harassment, sexual assault, whatever word you want to put with it, is very prevalent in our state as it is across the country.
Yeah, the numbers, if I recall correctly, I know we've had Christina Hale on the show several times. We had the dubious distinction, I think, of having the second highest rate of sexual assault among young women in the
high school girls.
Yeah.
High school girls. And actually that they've just reissued those statistics, and it's a tick better. It's third. We're third now. We're not second. We're third. But that's horrifying when you think about
it.
No, it's horrifying. These are high school girls between 9th and 12th grade, and we rank third in the nation of having the largest number of reported cases of sexual assault.
So I'm going to throw this out, and I want to hear everybody's thoughts on this. I will start, I think, with Rima on this one. Part of the reason I asked that question is it has always been out there. But it was one of those things that for years no one talked about. And now it seems like almost overnight it is something that everyone is talking about. What produced the change? Was there a tipping point, or was it an incremental thing?
I think that this past week alone, what we saw happen in Alabama, I think people across the nation are saying that's enough. Across party lines, they're saying that's enough. This is not something that we stand for. And frankly, I think that when we have organizations like Women for Change, we saw in our first meeting when hundreds of women came that we women have to have a seat at the table. And now that more and more women are having a seat at the table, they're saying enough is enough. And I think that has to do with it.
Yeah, let me give Kit a chance to jump in as well. And then I promise I'm going to get Tracy and Deborah. I want to hear your thoughts too. Kit, are you with us? Well, we'll come back to Kit. Tracy?
Well, I think that we're talking about the reason that this hasn't been talked about in the past is because people were afraid. Women were afraid. They were afraid they weren't going to be believed. We're still seeing that today, that they are going to become maligned, that they are going to become all of the focus is going to be on them, that somehow it was their fault, and they'll be blamed for the incident. And so there's strength in numbers. And I think when women, when the Harvey Weinstein case became public, that gave voice to women who had been living with this for years and finally felt like they were not alone and that there was strength in numbers and that they were able to say enough is enough and we are going to change the cultural what has been accepted as normal behavior.
Kit, I understand you're with us.
I hope so. Am I there?
Yes, yes.
Awesome.
Great.
Yeah, I really think that we're in a cultural moment where folks are, because we've built some momentum as people have been becoming more and more comfortable coming forward. And I think we're seeing the media and the culture itself sort of grappling with what it means to disclose that you've experienced sexual assault or harassment. And when we talk about this, I think people often sort of reduce this. You referred earlier to, you know, treating it as a due process issue when we're really talking about something that we're solving in the society. I think that people sort of reduce it to that because we're used to thinking of concepts like innocent until proven guilty. So seeing people, you know, solving this problem organically Can everybody still hear me?
Yes, yes,
okay,
we got
great.
You. Yeah, we're good.
I think that solving this problem organically is something that we have to do, and we have to consider what the solutions culturally look like outside of the courts. How do we respond as people when someone discloses that they've experienced sexual assault or harassment? And that's a very different question than how do we deal with it in the courts.
Deborah, why do you think it's exploded at this time?
Well, the thing that occurs to me is that among the bravest women in this country are those young, formerly children who were abused in the gymnastics setting.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few years back in the swimming, you know, the USA swimming setting. So there have been people that have come forward, but it has taken years for them to have the courage to step up and say, look, something terrible happened to me. And I want something done about it. And you know, as I look at this, I look at the last couple of years when, you know, those women came forward, now adult women, one by one, and that has just snowballed. And as they did that, other women were able to say, you know, that has happened to me. So Harvey Weinstein, you know, Matt Lauer, all these people who had apparently been in positions of power and taking horrible advantage of that power over a period of time, many years, are now being called to account.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about sexual harassment and sexual misconduct on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Rima.
When speaking of the brave women that have come forward and talked about what has happened to them, you know, the trending hashtag #MeToo, mm-hmm. it has reached over 85 countries with 1.7 million tweets. And Facebook reported in less than 24 hours, there was 4.7 million users that use that hashtag. And over 45% of users in the United States have friends that have used that hashtag. These are astounding numbers. I mean, it's just incredible how women have now come forward and how we are all standing up together, like I said before, to say this has to stop.
Tracy.
So the question is, what do we do about this? Because yeah. we clearly are at this incredible time in our history, and this is an opportunity for us to honor and respect the brave women that have come forward. But we also have to step back and say, how do we stop this? This mm-hmm. is an opportunity for us as a society to come together, you know, across party lines, across genders, across everything, and just say, how do we end this behavior? And that is a deeper question about how do you flip the narrative and end rape culture? Because we live in a society where rape culture is very prevalent, and it's an issue of power. It's an issue of having of making people feel afraid of being able to take advantage of people through powerful positions or perceived or otherwise powerful positions, and that is the harder conversation. We have to peel this onion back and really look at what we're talking about, and it's making this behavior unacceptable. So it's not about, you know, we have to look at these perpetrators and say, what environments allowed you to think that this was okay? And that's a tougher conversation to have, but that's the one that needs to happen now.
I think it's important. Is this a universal problem, or is it specific to American culture? Because so far, most of the reports, maybe because Americans tend to be preoccupied with American culture, have focused on this country. Deborah, you're leaning into the microphone. So.
Well, this certainly isn't just an American problem. I mean, Rima just said...
Well, and I guess I wasn't trying to frame that. Is it worse here or better, or is it the same?
I do not think it's worse here. There are actually other countries where I think that the male dominance is much more powerful mm-hmm. Than in the U.S. And those women are going to have a much harder time coming forward. I think we're more willing to accept the reports and say this is wrong, and maybe so in that sense, you know, I'd ask Rima, maybe we're ahead of the game.
Rima, I think you've been cued there.
This is definitely not an American problem. I think that as one of the most powerful nations in the world, many countries, many people look to us, and this might also provide people around the world a platform to come forward.
We are talking about sexual harassment and sexual misconduct today on No Limits. My guests are Rima Shahid, Executive Director of Women for Change Indiana, Tracy Horth Krueger, Executive Director of the Indiana Coalition to End Sexual Assault, Deborah Daniels of Krieg DeVault, and she's also a former U.S. Attorney and U.S. Assistant Attorney General, and joining us by phone is Kit Malone, Transgender Education and Advocacy Coordinator for the ACLU of Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about sexual harassment and sexual misconduct on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Rima Shahid, Executive Director of Women for Change Indiana, Tracy Horth-Kruger, Executive Director of the Indiana Coalition to End Sexual Assault, Deborah Daniels, who is with Krieg DeVault. She's managing partner. She's also a former U.S. attorney and U.S. assistant attorney general. And joining us by phone is Kit Malone, who is transgender education and advocacy coordinator for the ACLU of Indiana. Again, if you want to join the conversation, you can do what Andrew has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Andrew, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
A couple of things. In America, we do believe in the rule of law. We do believe that you're innocent until proven guilty, unless and until you admit it, which is the situation that we find ourselves in now. So many of these men, and they're all men, have admitted that that's what's happened. With respect to people like Roy Moore and Donald Trump, they haven't admitted what they did, but both of them have shown repeatedly that the rule of law doesn't mean anything to them. And I think that it's okay, it's safe to assume that when somebody does not believe in the rule of law, that maybe there's a strong presumption that what they did really, what they're accused of doing really happened.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing that point, Andrew. Deborah, I'm going to give you the first chance to respond to that.
Well, we're seeing some interesting things happen. In the case of Roy Moore, he was just defeated, and he was defeated, I would say, primarily on the basis of these allegations that were very convincing and believed by the public. You've got a state like Alabama where Democrats don't get elected very often.
Yeah, there was a 600,000 vote swing
right
between November of last year and this election on Tuesday.
So I think you're really seeing some things happening along that line. And, you know, it's a longer conversation to get into the whole innocent until proven guilty issue and when that applies and when it doesn't. But in these public settings, the voters in that case had a right to choose.
Well, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Tracy, but I think this was the point you were trying to make earlier, that there is a difference between a legal proceeding and how we are trying to solve this as a society. You have a right, you know, to a fair trial and to a presumption of innocence if you are charged with a crime. On the other hand, there are no presumptions in your favor if you're seeking elective office. You have to make the case that you deserve that, that you can be entrusted with that authority. I've gotten an email. Is that a correct reflection of the point you were trying to make earlier, Tracy?
This is a cultural issue.
Yeah.
And it is certainly a crime in many cases, and in some of the cases that have been brought to light, I mean, it sounds as if crimes were committed. There were several cases where the word rape was used. Well, that's a crime. And it goes beyond in many cases bad behavior to actually committing a crime. So but no charges yet on any of those kinds of things. So I want us to focus on the fact that this is shifting the conversation to what is acceptable behavior and what is not. And we are at a remarkably powerful time right now in our country to have those conversations.
In other words, there are times it can be wrong even if it's against the law, if it's not against the law.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Deborah.
And I'd add at the same time that there are awful lot of people who will say, well, he's never been convicted of a crime, ergo, he didn't do it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important to make that distinction. Mm-hmm. Just because a person has never been charged with a crime or convicted of that crime doesn't mean he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Gotten an email from a listener named Betsy. And again, if you want to join the conversation by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Would love to hear thoughts about why Anita Hill's info did not spur the Me Too response? Did social media have a major role, or were we not ready as a whole society to embrace this issue? Kit, I'm going to throw that one to you first, but I can see Rima leaning into the microphone too. So,
yeah, I mean, absolutely. Of course, it was a different time. And now we're at a time where we're able to spread this information very quickly. I also just want to recognize something that I think is really important about the Me Too movement, which is that it was begun by a woman of color.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, of course, as we know, you know, we talk a lot about the 1 in 5 statistic, but we know that that also, when you break that down by subgroups, many subgroups are, you know, disproportionately affected by sexual harassment and assault. So to see a movement spawned by a group of women who experience disproportionate levels of sexual violence, and to see their voices centered in the movement has been so important to me personally, and I think has been a very powerful part of why this has achieved such a groundswell, because it's not just seen as the purview of celebrities and powerful people. It's seen as something that's very grassroots that everyone can take part in and everyone can learn from and listen to.
Rima.
I wholeheartedly agree with what Kit is saying. I think women of color are disproportionately affected. I think marginalized groups are affected. I think that there are groups of people where you don't want to air your dirty laundry or bring it out, and now those people are coming out. And I think that this issue really highlights the fact that women, you know, I know I've said this before, but I think that this issue highlights the acute and very real need for women to be at the decision-making process. And not just one kind of woman. I think women of color, other women, we all have to come together and put a stop to this culture.
Do you worry at all that the attention that's being paid to it now is going to fade away? And I'm going to put this in a more non, you know, since we referenced Anita Hill and we've been talking largely about Donald Trump and Roy Moore here. I remember when I was a newspaper reporter 20 years ago when the Clinton Lewinsky stuff broke. We had, not on this scale, but many of these same conversations, and the newspaper I worked for at the time assigned me to do a story to sort of localize that, about figuring out where lines should be drawn and all of that. And I remember once word slipped out about what I was working on, every time I went over to the State House, for example, people literally would turn around. I remember one legislator who's no longer with us, so I won't name the guy, literally turned around and ran out of the building to avoid having to talk with me.
And what does that tell you?
It tells me an awful lot. But again, that sort of, it faded away, and we're having the same conversation now a generation later on a much larger scale.
You mentioned a few minutes earlier or referenced social media. And I do think that that is what the significant difference is right now in terms of keeping this momentum going. The ability for us to communicate so easily and stay connected on particular issues. So I think that that's what will make this different and could potentially keep this momentum going. But I do believe that too much has happened in the last, you know, few months. I'm looking at my colleagues here. Too much has happened in the last few months for this to just fade away. I don't think that's going to happen.
The toothpaste can't go back into the tube, right?
No, I absolutely agree. I think it's here to stay. I do think that in these former instances many years ago, there was no one else standing up, and we didn't have social media, so you mm-hmm. couldn't have the Me Too movement. And people were just afraid. Women were afraid to come forward and say, well, you know, that sort of thing happened to me. And so now we do have such a groundswell of women being willing to stand up and say, hey, it happened to me too, and not be embarrassed about that, but rather say this was wrong, that I don't think it'll go away.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about sexual harassment and sexual misconduct on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Jill has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jill, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to call in because I think it's important to recognize that with the election of Donald Trump, a lot of white women especially saw males in their family or friends that they looked to, you know, for security and saw them vote for somebody that had clearly acted inappropriately. And it was almost as if it was saying that things that had happened, you know, to us were okay. And I don't want to take anything away from women of color who fought this fight, you know, long before us. But, you know, I think it raised our ire enough to use our white privilege to, you know, really move that forward.
Thanks very much for the call and for the comment. I notice everyone's leaning away from the microphones now.
I will say this, that I do believe that this conversation started to be more, we started talking about this more after the Access Hollywood tape. And we would be just ridiculous not to mention that. That really was an unbelievable time when we were listening to someone use those words, describe that behavior, and think that it was okay.
Would we be, and I'll reframe, Jill, if I may take the liberty of sort of reframe, do you think we would be at this point having this conversation at the level we are if the Access Hollywood tape hadn't been released and at a time when you know, that candidate was running against the first female presidential nominee in the country's history. I mean, is there some quality here that it's like a perfect storm? Kit, I'll throw that one to you first.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that, I mean, this is just my personal read on the situation, that we would be there regardless. The time was right for this conversation, and several things floating in the culture may have sparked it. But this has been backbuilding for some time. Women have been gathering on, as we mentioned, social media for years, discussing this issue, developing language for talking about it, developing language for addressing the issue. I think that perhaps you could point to one or two moments in the news, like the Access Hollywood tape, and those just horrible, horrible comments. But I think that this was something that was coming. I think that this was something that the time was right for, which is why I also think it's not going to go away. Just to add that, I think that this is sustainable precisely because it is organic, because it represents a cultural shift, not just one broad, you know, sort of media moment.
Deborah, did you want to add something? Or?
Well, I was just going to say that there are so many factors in the political arena. People were making decisions in these elections in many cases, and certainly the presidential election, based on, well, I know that isn't a good thing, but I want him there because of what he would do in terms of policy would be things that I would believe in, therefore I'm going to vote for him. So I think people who voted for Donald Trump are willing to set aside those concerns. Some of them may not have had them. Many people are going to say they don't believe the accusers if they politically agree with the accused. Mm-hmm. And that happens on both sides of the fence.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's just an issue that doesn't happen as much in the, say, the Harvey Weinstein situation.
Yeah, and we should emphasize here that this is... I don't know whether you'd frame it as a nonpartisan or a bipartisan issue. I mean, for every Donald Trump, there is a John Conyers or a Bill Clinton or whomever. Tracy, you're shaking your head.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
And I do not think that I think this crosses all political lines. It crosses all socioeconomic lines. It crosses all. There is no one in the world that is immune from this. And I don't think we should ever look at this as a political issue or anything like that, because it's beyond all of that.
We've gotten a Facebook comment from a listener named Terry. And again, if you want to join the conversation via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Terry writes, I have experienced unwanted sexual advancements everywhere from office work to the thoroughbred racetrack. I think we are talking about women as property here. I'm seeing everyone just so the audience can, Now, everyone in the room is nodding affirmatively to that comment. Unfortunately, silence doesn't work that well on radio. So I'm going to ask Rima actually to speak to her nod of assent there.
I couldn't agree more with that. I think that this has women. I was this morning, I was speaking with Amy Nelson from the Fair Housing Association, the executive director, and she was telling me about case after case of landlords that pry and use women. And so this has nothing to do with parties, races, gen, you know, non-binary, et cetera. It's across everywhere, and it's unfortunate.
Well, it's all about the lack of it's all about men feeling empowered, men mm-hmm. feeling powerful, men feeling like they have control over, and making women feel as if for some reason, in order for them to advance in their careers, advance in their jobs, get a job, whatever that might be, that this is behavior that they have to put up with in order to be able to put food on their table, and that is just so unthinkable and so terrible that it to have a person have to live with that kind of fear in order to keep their job is just amazingly. I don't even know the words. I don't even know. Deborah, help me with the words. I don't even know the words. It's disgusting.
I'll say this has always been the situation, though. I used to prosecute child abuse and adult sex offense cases in Marion County many years ago, and it's always been a power situation. You know, you'll hear that time and again. Mm-hmm. Rape is not a crime involving sex or lust. It is power, mm-hmm. and it's one person exerting power over another, and that's what's going on here. Men see, and I hate to pin this all on men, but it seems to go that way. They see the opportunity mm-hmm. to get something that they want by holding mm-hmm. their thumb on someone, and this is how they choose to do that.
Speaking of the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana, they sent us a note saying, be aware that sexual harassment can take many forms. At the Fair Housing Center, we have encountered housing providers who sexually harass female tenants. Typically, those targeted are tenants who are low income and would have extreme difficulty moving or finding other housing. They are targeted in exchange for deposits, rent, or to get repairs made, or to keep an eviction from happening. Tenants experiencing this type of housing do have rights under fair housing laws to get this sort of unlawful behavior stopped. Learn more on our education page, and what they've done is there is a link to the education page on our Facebook page at No Limits WFYI. Also asked all of our guests to monitor the Facebook page after we go off the air, because this discussion is likely to continue for a while. I would invite all of our listeners to do that as well. We are talking about sexual harassment and sexual misconduct on No Limits today. My guests are Rima Shahid, Executive Director of Women for Change Indiana, Tracy Hort Kruger, Executive Director of the Indiana Coalition to End Sexual Assault, Deborah Daniels, Krieg DeVault's Managing Partner, and Kit Malone, Transgender Education and Advocacy Coordinator for the ACLU of Indiana. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about sexual harassment and sexual misconduct on No Limits. Okay. My guests are Rima Shahid, Executive Director of Women for Change Indiana, Tracy Horth Kruger, Executive Director of the Indiana Coalition to End Sexual Assault, Deborah Daniels, former U.S. Attorney and U.S. Assistant Attorney General, who is now Krieg DeVault's Managing Partner, and Kit Malone, Transgender Education and Advocacy Coordinator for the ACLU of Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Blake has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Blake, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
Hi, I wanted to talk more about how rape culture is so pervasive, because
I've noticed with a lot of apologists, you know, whenever an accusation comes up, people are always like, well, why did they wait so long? How come they waited X amount of years? And I think the fact of the matter is that in many cases, they've made a claim. You know, they've tried making a claim before and it was just ignored. These types of crimes and these types of transgressions, it's really the only place that you hear of people saying, well, what did the victim do? You don't hear that for theft or murder or any other sort of crime. It's what was they were this was this person being too flirty or what were they wearing? And that's really all my comment is.
Thanks very much for the call. Tracy.
Thank you.
That is a perfect example of when we talk about victim blaming. That's victim blaming. It's how do we take the responsibility away from the perpetrator and put it on the victim? Had they been drinking? What were they wearing? Why were they walking alone? Why were they – whatever scenario you want to put them in, we do not want to accept the fact that the perpetrator is actually responsible for the behavior and they want to blame the victim. So this is an example of why for all of these years women are very afraid to come forward because they know that they're not going to be believed and they know they're going to be judged. And they have just experienced the most heinous crime that one can imagine. And no one's going to – there's a very strong likelihood that people are not going to believe them.
And they're re-victimized in the process.
We've gotten a Facebook question and comment from a listener named Rex. And again, to join the conversation on Facebook, you just have to go to No Limits WFYI. Rex writes, please excuse me. Please ask – the panelists to stop saying men in favor of some men and some women, too. I do not want to be lumped in with the likes of Roy Moore, Bill Clinton, and Harvey Weinstein simply because I, too, have a Y chromosome.
I would love to take that.
Sure, Kit.
I'd start with, you know, I also have a Y chromosome, even though I am a woman. And I think that one thing that men need to understand is that when we say men do X, we're speaking demographically. And if it makes folks uncomfortable to be lumped into the same demographic that disproportionately commits sexual assault, I would ask them to put themselves in the shoes of women who are asked to look at everyone they meet and determine whether or not that person is safe. To make a judgment call about whether or not a man is safe to be around based on no information except for the fact that that person's a man. And that's unfair, but it's an unfair world, and everyone has to make these kinds of decisions for their safety. I think if it makes folks uncomfortable, if it makes men uncomfortable to be lumped in with that group, the best way to address that, and I understand that it must be very painful to be lumped in with rapists, and no one is saying that every single man is a rapist, but the best way to address it, if that bothers you and you want to change that, is to speak to other men, to engage the men in your life about the harms of sexual assault, and to do everything you can to change the culture so that's no longer that one of the defining elements of the demographic that you belong to.
Well, and I guess let me reframe it. Rex, I'm going to take the liberty to some degree of playing devil's advocate with your question. One of the things that has come out, and admittedly these are all really high-profile, very powerful men that we're hearing about so far. We haven't really talked as much about kind of the garden variety sexual harassment where there aren't going to be headlines when it happens because the perpetrator is not someone who may still have a position of some influence over an individual's life, but millions of people don't care about. One of the things that has struck me is in almost every one of these cases, once you scratched a little bit below the surface, it really wasn't a surprise. A lot of people apparently knew about Matt Lauer. A lot of people knew about John Conyers. A lot of people knew about Harvey Weinstein. A lot of people knew, so that there was a kind of conspiracy of silence that helped to protect these perpetrators. And, you know, I mean, I know people that I have worked with in the past that there have been whispers about that I haven't investigated. Tracy.
Well, it's interesting because we would say that they're when you're silent, you're complicit, and you're not helping the matter by keeping it silent. You know, we all have a responsibility to share information or try to address a situation when we know that it's not good. So one of the programs that we have, we actually are working with fraternity men in Indiana on being active bystanders. And the Facebook post that you mentioned made me think about this, because really, honestly, the majority of men are not rapists. They're not. They're very fine men, and they find this behavior appalling and upsetting. And I would invite them to become part of the movement. You know, this is not a women's issue. This is all of our issue. And I would think that men would not want to be lumped in like that and would raise their voices for good. So in this curriculum that we've developed, it's all about how are you an effective bystander? How do you call out that behavior? How do you say, you know, that's really not a funny joke. It's really demeaning. And I don't want to participate in that. And that's how they can become active participants and role models.
I would add that, you know, John, you talked about the conspiracy of silence and why don't people talk about it? Well, in the workplace, it's not just the victim of the harassment who fears for her job, but the other people may as well. So people who are not being directly victimized still don't want to speak up because they too might suffer under whatever tyrant is running the show.
Well, and I apologize to my audience because normally I try not to express opinions during this program. But the nature of this, I think there are also in some cases, I'll speak to myself, there is a reluctance at times to accuse people if you don't feel like you have any firsthand evidence or anything like that. Which I guess brings us to a question that Tracy raised when we were at the break. I mean, we're going to have to rethink a lot of these assumptions. Where do we go from here? Since you raised it, Tracy, you get to speak to it first.
Well, there are lots of levels. There are lots of ways that we can address this and improve this situation. So first of all, from the business standpoint, you know, do you have sexual harassment policies that are updated and active and are implemented? And are you creating a work environment where people aren't afraid to report if they suspect that something's going on as a bystander? And they certainly shouldn't be afraid to report if they're being victimized. As a society, are we looking at our own behaviors? I mean, do we laugh at jokes that demean women? Do we think it's okay for a potential perpetrator to, you know, touch someone inappropriately without their permission? And if we see that happening, are we confident enough to say, you know what, that's not appropriate and I'm not going to let you do that or intervene in some safe fashion? I mean, what are we doing with our own behaviors and our own thoughts about this, and how are we looking at how we treat each other? I mean, there's a lot we can do just looking inward and how we react to things. And we could do a lot to really reduce the incidences, but also make people feel comfortable and safe to report if they've been victimized.
Go ahead, Deborah.
Oh, your comment about businesses, companies have a business interest in providing a means for reporting and in dealing with these issues, because they too can be liable if they allow something to go on in the workplace. So it's, there are multiple reasons why companies should be very interested in doing exactly what you're talking about.
We've gotten a Facebook, really it's a story from Mary. Again, if you want to join the conversation via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Mary writes, I want to stress the point that women and young girls must know that they will be believed when they push down their fear and tell someone they have been assaulted. As an African-American teenager in the 80s, I reluctantly told my mother that a neighbor had cornered me and touched me inappropriately, only to be disregarded and see no action taken. People who sexually assault are and have always been in our workplaces, churches, neighborhoods, and schools. A decade later, my mother called me to inform me that my neighbor had been charged by police after being accused by several high school girls for behaving inappropriately as he volunteered in the school. Women must be heard and believed in order to possibly prevent future offenses. Thank you for talking about this today. Rima, I'm going to ask, How do we go about, because that was the other persistent theme for all of the stories about the Matt Lauers and all of that, what emerged is women did try to speak up along the way. They did try to say, you know, this was wrong. It happened to me, and this was wrong, and no one believed them. How do we go about empowering women?
I think one of the core missions of Women for Change Indiana is for women to be heard, to have their voice at the table, to be heard in a civic way, to be leaders. We saw last year when we had over 500 women come together at our first meeting that women felt like they were not in power and they were powerless for a long time. And now we were regaining that back. A lot of people were saying that that there was an energy to reclaim our voices. Our sister organization, Ready to Run, we had women with that were never politically involved, that had no affiliation to any party, come forward. And women are speaking up there. And I think Women for Change is providing a community where women's values are being valued. And I don't think that you have to be a man or a woman to understand this. I think you simply have to be a human being.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Marion. And again, if you want to join the conversation via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. It says, is there a place for application of restorative justice in some of these cases involving inappropriate but not violent behaviors? Seems men and women need to talk with each other about this, and I am concerned about scapegoating. Marion. Kit, I'll throw that one to you first.
Restorative justice is a wonderful idea. I don't know that I can answer that question specifically in terms of like a specific resource. However, there's certainly always a place for conversation. I'm concerned when we talk about scapegoating that what we're really saying here is that women should be more careful about coming forward. And I don't think that that's the case. And I also want to honor that. You know, if someone has assaulted someone, if someone has committed a violation of their personhood, asking them to sort of have a nice talk to get that, to heal with the person who committed that offense to them, that's a really hard ask, I think. I think that this is a thing where, you know, there may be a time for adult conversations in some places where we get together and work things out. But I think we still have not reached the sort of first bar, which is what the Me Too movement has sort of spurred, where we are enforcing the idea that, you know, we make it safe for women to name the people that have assaulted them. I think that women can be trusted generally to understand when it's safe for them to talk to the person who may have committed a minor offense. I think this idea that now we've hit, you know, the hashtag Me Too era and every man that's ever told a rude joke is going to lose his job, I think that I don't want to be dismissive of the concerns of the commenter, but I think that we're not there. I think where we are is we're having this sort of adult large conversation about what this looks like. And I think that sort of women can be trusted to make the judgment. I guess to bring it back to that, you know, we can be trusted to know when it's safe to try to build a bridge and to try to fix something or, you know, have a complicated conversation with someone who may have committed a minor offense. But it's not always safe.
We've got an email question from a listener named David. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. David writes, if, as one of the guests mentioned, sexual harassment is about power, why is it that there are no public charges against any women brought either by men or women against a female harassed? The easy answer is because only men do it, but do your guests believe that to be completely true? Are there any other reasons we're only hearing about men doing this? Deborah?
There are women who also abuse their power. There's no question about that. I think what this group has been saying is simply that this is a predominantly male offense. It's not a solely male offense.
And as part of that also, because it's still men who predominantly are in positions of power.
Partially, at least.
Partially. Okay, we've gotten an email, and I'm only going to take part of this from a listener named Patrice. Patrice writes, thank you for the program. What are panelists' specific ideas of how we keep protesting? Kit, we're getting close. We've only got about a minute. I'm going to give everybody about 15 seconds. So.
All right, I'll be real fast. Just keep talking. Keep the conversation up with your friends, with your family. Men in particular, engage each other on the issue.
Tracy.
Yes, I agree with that, Kit. Keep talking, but also we need to really listen. We need to listen to each other and what our thoughts and our feelings and our opinions are about this and be respectful of those. But we have to keep talking and listening to each other.
Deborah.
And I'll add that protesting isn't sufficient. We need to take ownership of this. Men need to take ownership of it. Protesting alone is never going to accomplish what we can accomplish if we take ownership.
Rima, you get the last word.
I agree with everyone, and I also think become engaged. Take back that power.
How do you go about doing that?
Come to Women for Change.
Okay. And I want to take the opportunity. We are just about at the end of the program here to say that the conversation can continue on our Facebook page. Again, it is No Limits WFYI. Everyone who has been part of the panel has agreed to continue monitoring the page and responding. We're going to put some URLs out there for people to get more information and ways that they can get involved on the Facebook page. So I would invite the audience. I'd like to thank our listeners for some great questions and comments and for making this discussion so productive. Also, would like to thank my guests, Rima Shahid, Executive Director of Women for Change Indiana, Tracy Horth Kruger, Executive Director of the Indiana Coalition to End Sexual Assault, Deborah Daniels, she's Creek DeVault's Managing Partner, also former U.S. Attorney and U.S. Assistant Attorney General, and Kit Malone, Transgender Education and Advocacy Coordinator for the ACLU of Indiana. Thank you all. It's been a great conversation. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.